Hi, everybody. I highly recommend the When Dating Hurts podcast. I found the podcast after I left an abusive relationship, but it continuously helps me on my healing journey. The podcast always reminds me that these people are damaged, they're emotionally draining, and they're dangerous to be around. I appreciate everything Bill has done for people like me. It keeps me from ever even considering going back. Love should not hurt. You deserve respect more than anything in a relationship. Take your power back and live the life you want to live. You deserve it.
The When Dating Hurts podcast continues to grow in popularity. The more who listen, the more who will know the realities of dating and domestic violence. In the meantime, the When Dating Hurts book in paperback, ebook, and audiobook is being purchased and read by concerned parents, teachers, victims and survivors, and of course, those who are currently dating. Education leads to empowerment. That way, if a potential abuser is targeting you or someone you care about, you will know how to detect it and how to break free and stay safe. Up next, another survivor story to illustrate how an innocent person can become manipulated and trapped in abusive relationships. We continue with part two. This is the final part of Cynthia's story. Cynthia found out she was pregnant. It gave her direction in life. She was no longer a young woman who could do anything she wanted. She was becoming a mother with new responsibilities. But the man who made her pregnant had a totally different set of feelings. He had different ideas. Domestic abuse shows itself in many ways. For part two, you might want to take notes. Here is Cynthia again telling her story.
I saw stuff in my brain all the time. I had nightmares all the time. So I wanted to not see that stuff. So my point is that pregnancy, it gave me a purpose.
I mean, that's a real identity change for you.
Right. It gave me a focus.
You go from being I'm this teen and I'm out and I'm doing stuff and having fun and whatever that is. And
yeah.
All of a sudden, wow, I'm responsible for another human being.
Not just me. I can't use that as an excuse anymore to be I feel crappy and my flashbacks today are terrible. So I'm going to get stoned, man. No, that's not good enough anymore. You can't do that. Now you're going to have to actually do the work. She was my motivation to get my life together. So I went to college.
Really?
Yeah, I got my nursing degree.
Really?
I did.
Wow, look at you.
Don't get too excited. Don't get too excited, Bill.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. No, it's okay. I mean, we did go for a while, but we'll get there.
Okay.
Anyway.
All right.
I have my child, and she's 20 now. Bless her. She is wonderful. All my kids are. The first indication I had that my ex was going to be a problem was while I was pregnant with her, though. I think I was having some problems, arranging the baby shower, and I was emotional. I was crying because I think there was always an argument about my family versus his family. There's a lot of women talk about that, too. Their family's okay, but, they always hate your family, right? Or, they alienate you and isolate you from your own family. So, when it came to the shower, trying to prepare for the baby shower, I wanted my family to do this thing, but, he wanted his family to be in charge of it. And I was like, no, I want my family to be in charge of it because this is my... I'm pregnant, so I'm hormonal. I'm pregnant. I'm crying. He started, verbally accosting me at that point and told me I was ridiculous. I think that was the first time he made it very apparent that he was not going to be emotionally supportive to me whatsoever in any capacity. So it doesn't really seem like a huge deal in retrospect, but it was at the time. I went on to have the baby. We had the baby shower. It ended up being fine. Had the baby. That was amazing. after you have a baby and the doctor says you got to wait 6 weeks until you can be intimate again. He gives all indications that he's going to be okay with that. And he's going to listen to what the doctor says, because I've got a laceration, you know, stitches down there and everything. I mean, you know, he decided, I suppose. And I even, not to give like TMI or anything, and I'm not going to get too specific, but I even went like out of my way to do other things just to make sure he wasn't feeling too left out or anything. So I'm trying to be reasonable. And I didn't feel pressured into that. That came out of my own head, because I'm trying to recognize this is going to be tough for you. 6 weeks. And this is coming from a new mom who's tired and whatever. So I think I'm being a good wife. In any case, he decides after 2 weeks, he's not waiting.
He's waited enough.
Yeah, he's not waiting. I told him, well, no, that's going to hurt. Like, I'm still in pain, you know? And he's like, oh, but no, that's, we're going to do that. And, you know, because we're fighting now, and, you know, he's like, I have needs and you have responsibilities. And I'm like, well, I have been trying to take care of those, haven't I? That's not good enough. That's not, I'm not waiting 6 weeks. It's ridiculous. You know, it's ridiculous. And he truly, honestly felt justified to have that argument. I just can't understand the sense of entitlement that men like this have. It's just mind-boggling. You truly, honestly feel entitled as if my body belongs to you. In any case, that was the first time he raped me.
Oh, so you went ahead with this?
Yeah, that was the first time. He truly just made me feel as though I didn't have a choice. And he didn't care that I was crying. He didn't care that it hurt. He didn't care about any of it. And I just curled up into a little fetal position on the edge of the bed. And I cried, and he went to bed. He went to sleep. I couldn't believe what happened. I just truly didn't understand. I spent the whole night. I don't think I went to bed eventually, maybe for like an hour or so. But I just was in such a state of disbelief. It took me a long time to even accept that that was an actual rape that just took place. I mean, I knew that it was, but also I didn't know. I was like, what? That's my husband. That's a person that I know. And so this went on to happen. I mean, there were times when he would literally chase me around the house. Like, I would try to hide. I would try to go into other rooms and hide, and he would find me. I would cry, and he didn't even care. I would cry while he was doing it. He did not care. He did not care. He would do it.
Now, is this like days and weeks and months later, you mean?
Yeah.
This is part of the relationship.
It became a pattern.
If he wants it now, he's getting it now.
Yeah, and he would take it. He would take it like whether I wanted it or not. Like, if I was enjoying it, that was fine. If I wasn't enjoying it, that was fine too.
It wasn't about you anyway.
Right. He did not care. And it was just his ability to do it and complete the act with me laying there crying. It was so unsettling to me that eventually I just stopped. You know, I just didn't do anything. I just disappeared. I just went somewhere else. You know what I mean? And that's just how it became. I just became like a stone. And eventually that pissed him off too, though. He didn't want that. He wanted me present somehow. The stone thing like was not okay. I can't explain that.
He wanted you to act like you were into it.
Right.
Like you were enjoying it. Put on an act if you have to.
It was either be miserable or be happy, but don't be disappeared.
You can't do anything if you're hard to find.
Right. Because he realized that that was like my strategy, you know, was like the stone. I called it like becoming like the stone. You know, cause he would do this crazy stuff at night to try to keep me awake. He used sleep deprivation a lot of times to get what he wanted, cause he didn't sleep. I don't know if that's just like the trait of a psychopath or what. He did not sleep a lot. It wasn't a big deal for him to keep me awake.
He would keep you awake until you submitted. Is that the idea?
Oh, he would take my blanket. He would take my pillow. He would just do crazy stuff. He would go like, you know, he would say my name just repeatedly over and over again in a monotone voice until, you know, to be annoying. Mm. He would like get his finger wet and stick it in my ear, like stick it on my nose. Just crazy, crazy stuff. Like, because eventually I would just stop moving. I would just dissociate. He hated it. Because he had to get a reaction out of me in some kind of way. He had to inflict some kind of suffering to provoke some kind of reaction. It was just crazy. It was truly crazy behavior. I think it was the same kind of concept when he was doing this sex stuff. If there was no reaction, it was not okay.
When we look down the list of things like red flags, we look at power and control techniques. We look at jealousy. We look at isolation. We look at somebody who is taking, if you had a cell phone back then, taking your cell phone, who are you texting, who are you talking to and all that.
Yeah.
Did he go through a lot of those stages too, you think?
I guess we had AT&T back then. And that was just in the infancy of when they had that family plan where you could get the GPS thing on there.
Okay.
You know, they had just started that. So he would track my every move. If I was even so much as 5 minutes past what he thought would be a reasonable amount of time to get from destination A to B, he'd be like, where did you stop? Where did you go? He would track everything. Then he would log into all of my email. He had all my passwords, all my everything. So nothing was sacred. Nothing was private. I was always being accused of cheating.
I was about to ask you that. That's exactly what I was going to say.
He would sniff my underwear. He would literally go in the laundry and examine each and every one of my underwear to determine whether or not it appeared as if I was having relations with someone. I mean, it was truly bizarre.
Was he doing this himself, on the other hand? Did he have anything on the outside that you're aware of?
I never got any proof, but there was strange behavior. I never got proof to verify, but there was strange behavior.
Did you find him about a lot of things in life lying about a lot of things?
Yeah, but, you know, he would never admit it. I wouldn't say he would lie about a lot of things, but he's very, very cunning, and he's got like a silver tongue. So he's one of those real crafty ones. You know what I mean? He's not like a pathological liar where everything that comes out of his mouth is just not true, or that he lies his way to get out of everything. He's just smooth. He's just real smooth. He can turn any truth into, or any lie, he can just distort anything. So it's not quite a lie. It's still kind of the truth, but it's not quite, you know what I mean? It's like that.
Now, in your email to me, a couple of your emails to me, you talked about things where you and he broke up, and you said a million times.
Yeah.
It's not like you were dating and you broke up. What is breaking up? Is that like you packed up and left?
Yeah, well, I say a million times, but maybe that's just me being dramatic. I guess there was one really big one. That was in 2011, and that was the first time I got a PFA. My sister kind of helped me like jailbreak out of there. That was when, we were married at that point. The kids were all still pretty little at that point. So six, four, and one. So they were little. It's just, you know, every woman reaches a breaking point. You know, you've even spoken about that before.
Yes.
You know, every woman has that magic threshold where it's like, no more can be taken.
I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, yes. I gotta go. So he had made numerous threats that he was going to try to get me in trouble with my work and this and that and third. And he was already doing stuff like trying to make me late every day, standing in front of my car so I couldn't leave and that kind of stuff. Just stupid things. Just really trying to mess with my life. And you know, so I just had enough. My sister called and was like, do you need some help? And I was like, I really, really do. And so she was like, let me call the police for you. And so she did, so that I didn't have to do it, because I was in a situation where I couldn't get away from him in the house. Like, I couldn't even make the phone call, but I was able to text her. So she's like, I'm just going to call for you. I said, thank you. Somehow, some kind of way that happened. I'm not 100% sure, but that happened. She called them for me and they showed up, you know, and I explained to them, listen, he's not letting me leave to work. He's already done this for the past several days in a row. He, you know, and this morning he won't even let me leave to work. At this point, I'm just trying to leave. I got to get out of here. And so the one officer went and talked to him over here. And I'm talking to this one over here. He's like, listen, you can go to the courthouse now, go get your PFA kind of deal. We'll hold him here, but you're going to have to take the kids with you and go now, you know? And so we did. I got the PFA, and I would like to say that it was all super simple and easy, and it wasn't. We went to court a whole bunch of times. It was nasty. It was contentious. He wanted to argue about every little thing. He didn't want me to have any of the cars. It was just a mess. Everything was a mess.
How did it work out with things like the cars? What was the judgment on that?
He had to concede.
It would seem like it. How did it go down about the kids? You know, seeing the kids, how did that go down?
Initially, we had joint custody, because that's usually what happens in situations like this. So
in this case, was it 1 week here, 1 week there, bouncing back and forth? How'd they
Well, we were very close to each other at that time, basically like right down the street from each other. He was staying with his parents and I was in our house because the house was in my name. So like the kids would be with me for a couple of days. Let's say, for example, Monday, Tuesday, then they'd go with him Wednesday, Thursday, and then we would alternate weekends. That's kind of how we did that for a while. So that was working out for us for a while. But, you know, if there's any advice that I have to give to any of your listeners out there, it is when you leave an abusive relationship, do not be tempted to get into another relationship. Do yourself the biggest favor and don't do that, because you're not in a healthy state of mind. You're still programmed to receive abuse. You're still programmed to just to receive that abuse, and you're going to not be in a healthy place to attract a healthy partner. So that's the mistake that I made. So I thought, hey, man, life's going to get good for me now. I broke away. I did the thing. I got the PFA. I'm safe. I'm healthy. I got family around me. My support people are back. I got my kids 50-50. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. But it wasn't, because I picked another guy. He was even worse than my ex in just about every way. Not only was he abusive, but he was also an addict. All I could see was like just stars in my eyes. He was a tattoo artist. He had his own tattoo shop. And I was like, oh man, this is amazing. And I didn't know he was a drug addict at first, but it didn't really take me that long to figure it out.
What was he actually using?
Meth.
Oh.
Crystal meth.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Gracious.
I mean, you couldn't pick one that's worse than that. So that's as bad as it gets right there. I remember the first time he offered that to me, I think was 6 weeks into when we were seeing each other, and I got mad. I got like insulted. I was like, I'm a registered nurse. How could you do that? How could you know? And then, I mean, maybe like what, like 2 weeks after that, I used for the first time.
You really used it?
I did.
What was that like?
I think it's like an explosion of dopamine and neurotransmitters. When you're deficient in that for a long time, it can be an overwhelming experience. And all of a sudden you think, oh my God, this person is like the love of my life, because I'm experiencing the highest highs I've ever felt in my life with that person. So now I'm drug bonding with this person. And it's creating an unrealistic expectation of what I think is happening. And it's not real. None of it's real, because this is an artificial induced experience based on drugs.
How could that possibly work? You know, you're using that, but you have children.
It didn't work. So I was seeing him on my days off. So like when my ex would have the kids, I would go see this other guy.
Oh, I see now. Okay.
And for a while I thought, oh, I can make that work. It's not sustainable. When you're using that substance, you have days where you're down afterwards.
You crash.
You're exhausted. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then who do you think has to deal with that? Mommy, I'm hungry. Mommy, I want to play. I can't right now because I'm passed out on the couch.
So when the scammer uses the hypnotic method of building rapport, then they create dysfunctional, delusional reality.
That's how a scam begins. Convincing the mark that it makes perfect sense to hand over their money to a con artist. The Scams and Cons podcast tells you how scams are run. You'll hear how people are convinced to buy fake art, buy machines that print money, or steal your house.
I get a phone call from my wife, and she let me know that they had decided to move all our stuff out. I could no longer do anything about it except go through an eviction.
And you'll hear it from the experts, people who run the cons.
So we go to your bank, you go in and get $6,000 cash, give us each $3,000, we give you this. Uh-huh. You go home, and what you find out is cut up newspaper.
It's fun to know how the trick is done, and that's what Scams and Cons is all about. Listen at scamsandcons.com or wherever fine podcasts are found.
That's what they have to live with. And so I went to rehab. My ex actually called me out on my behavior. This drugging behavior went on for a period of about 6 months with this guy. And my ex got very jealous. I will thank him for that, actually, in a roundabout way. He got very jealous that I was spending my time with this guy. Mm-hmm. It wasn't because he wanted to like save the day or be like, something bad is happening in this home for these kids. He wanted me because he was bringing me other drugs on the side to try to win me back. And when that didn't work, he went and sounded the alarm to the family and said, hey, she's using drugs. She needs to go to rehab. So that's basically what happened. And I'm glad it happened. I'm glad it happened because...
Is that like a 30-day rehab
deal?
No.
No, this was a Christian rehab. Teen Challenge, actually. I went to Teen Challenge in Philadelphia for 14 months.
14 months you were...
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you're going there, but what is going there? Is that like just doing meetings, you mean? Or
no, I live there. Yeah, I lived...
For a year and 2 months.
Yes. And my family would bring my kids to visit me every week for like 4 hours. They would get to see my progress. I got really fat because what do you do when you're getting sober? You eat, you know, and you figure out how to not like have that diseased mentality anymore.
Your nursing career at this point, this can't be helpful.
No, I still have my nursing career, if you can believe that or not. I didn't do anything at that time to jeopardize it. So I hadn't done anything illegal or anything along those lines. It was just the fact that 6 month period, you know, I'm not doing the things that I'm supposed to be doing. And as if that wasn't grounds enough to be making changes in my life. Mm-hmm. There was plenty of reasons, but my nursing degree is still okay. It's still in rehab. I'm almost ready to graduate. And my ex is really working on me really hard to get back together, saying things like, you know, God wants families to be restored. He wants to put families back together. I've been working on getting my minister's license, my pastor's license, because I really feel that God wants to put this thing together. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I don't think that's true. I was like, I don't think that's true because you're still exhibiting a lot of the same behaviors that you did before. Sometimes you come here and you sit in your little chair and you just sit there and you look crappy. You look shitty, pardon my French, but you just have that look on your face and you got your arms crossed and you just, your energy sucks. And you make everybody feel weird for the whole visit. And like, why? And I'm like, I hate it when you do that. And I feel like nothing's going to be different. And so, no, like there's so many reasons why I don't want to get back together with you.
But you also had in your email that here he's going off, he's going to do this minister deal, and you didn't think he believed in God anyway.
Right, because he never did. Exactly. He never did believe in God, even before we were together. And so I just thought it was so bizarre that, you know, all of a sudden, because I'm in a Christian rehab, that he feels the need to become a pastor. And like, it's almost as if he's trying to impress me all over again. And it's not working. It's not working at all. And so he just got really angry and deflated, like his balloon just made the deflating sound. He got angry. He got really angry. He didn't say anything at all. But I did find out just how angry he was, maybe about like, I don't know, 2 weeks to 3 weeks later, when I got served with papers, still at the rehab, stating that he had been awarded full physical custody of all of our children.
Oh, that's quite a move there.
Yeah. So now I was not going to be returning to 50-50 custody with my kids anymore. It was just going to be, he had them and he could do whatever he wanted with them. It didn't matter that he had domestic violence on his record. It didn't matter. The judge granted it because I was still living in a residential rehab. And so any judge that looks at that is going to be like, oh, yes, please take those kids.
He's not so great, but you're not so great either. Yeah,
exactly. And so I don't blame the judge in that scenario. I mean, I get it. And so that's what happened there. And that's kind of the beginning of where everything just, that's where it started to get bad, I think, for me.
But you saying it got bad for you, what do you mean in this case?
My depression, I think I just started sinking deeper and deeper into a hole that I felt like I could not climb out of because he just kept winning.
Okay.
No matter what, he just kept winning. I kept trying to stand up for myself and say, no, I don't want you anymore. And every time I did that, he kept winning. And I couldn't understand it. So I just kept feeling like, why? Defeated, you know, like, why?
What's the point? Why even play the game anymore?
Yeah. So then I came home and I won this settlement for a car accident. I won a settlement for $30,000. It was mine. But he tried to fight with me to get that because I got it technically while we were still married. And he thought he was entitled to that. So he tried to fight with me about that. And then because through legal proceedings, he realized he couldn't get any of that money. He then went and put me on child support. So then I was immediately put on the child support. I start working. I'm already on child support. I can't see my kids anywhere near as much as I would like to. So I think I immediately just got depressed and I relapsed.
Oh.
Not on the drug, but I just got drunk. Mm. I started drinking because I thought to myself, well, that's legal. I'm not going to get arrested and go to jail. I don't know. We rationalize things in our brain, right? We do that. That was a stupid rationalization. I was hurting and I felt really stupid. And, you know, so I did. I ended up getting a DUI and that's what did it for my nursing license. The state board found out. And even though it was a first time offense, doesn't matter if you don't have a criminal record. It's all it takes is a first time offense. So they take your license away. Now you can get it back, but you got to do a lot of things to get it back. As part of my shame process, I get stuck in inactivity. So I just haven't gotten it back. I still could to this day, but I haven't.
You say you got stuck in inactivity.
Yeah, I get depressed and then I don't.
So you just shut down. You don't want to do anything. You just want to sit.
Because I feel like now I deserve it.
Sit in the chair and watch TV or whatever.
Yeah, I feel like I deserve the punishment. So that's something that I struggle with.
Okay, it's understandable.
We're working through it. We're working through it, Bill. So
good for you. Good for you.
So that happened. I got out, got put on the child support. Got the DUI, so then the nursing license thing happens.
You've got to feel like everything that ever meant anything to you has been pulled away from you.
Right, but here's the thing. I can't be like super mad at him all the way because I gave him every play he had in his playbook. I gave it to him with these little and not so little bad decisions that I made. It was like all he needed. And he just grabbed that and like ran with it.
So how long ago, this part you're talking about right now, how long ago was this? Yeah. Are we talking just a few years? Are we talking a lot of years?
No. Okay. So yeah, at this point, that was probably in like 2014, 15. Okay. So what happened at that point? I still tried for a couple of years, I think, to make it on my own.
What were you doing to make money?
I was just working kind of regular jobs. Like I worked in a warehouse for a while. I did some clerical stuff, like secretary stuff. I did a lot of different things. And then I did try to have another relationship. That's the father of my youngest there. It didn't really amount to a whole lot. I wouldn't say that was an abusive situation, but I think it could have turned into one. We weren't together long enough for me to really know. I will say that this was somebody who did get incarcerated when I was 4 months pregnant with her. So I'm sure exactly. You're smiling because you already know where that's going to go. And my picker's bad. As Dr. Drew would say, my picker is bad.
It's funny you use that term because I was editing a podcast just the other day. In fact, I think it starts running tomorrow. And she used the same term and I had never heard it before.
Yeah, it must be us ladies listening to Dr. Drew. That's why my picker's bad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it is. So, you know, that's why I intentionally stay single now, because I know that. So, and I'm at a place in my life where I don't need to be in a relationship. I would like to have companionship. I would like to have a best friend. But until I can trust myself to make sound decisions, I'm not going to engage. Yeah, so I did try that relationship with her father. You know, that didn't work out so well. Eventually, I ended up getting back together with my ex-husband. And the reason why we did get back together is because I kind of realized, you know what, I'm running out of time with my children. They're growing up. And I feel like I just had this feeling impressed upon my heart. I'm running out of time to, like, they're going to be grown.
They won't be under your roof forever. That's for sure.
Right. And he had caused so much parental alienation, so much brainwashing, like, your mom, you know, is just crazy. She's crazy. You know, she doesn't love you like she's supposed to. And that's why, you know, she's like, that's why I have custody of you, you know, and you only visit with her like sometimes compared to living with me, blah, 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 you know. And so like, I just decided, I was like, I'm just going to have to, if you can't beat them, join them. You know, I was like, you have to be strong enough. You're just going to have to, I can do it. I was like, I can weather this storm. I'm just going to have to bite the bullet. And because there's no other way I'm going to be able to have this time left with my kids, I'm not going to be able to just see them sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. like on the weekends or whatever.
Right.
So he was extending me this olive branch, and he was saying, listen, I could really use some help with the kids, like a couple days a week. Maybe you just want to come by the house. You can stay here. You can like sleep on the couch or whatever, but I could really use this. I knew it was a trap. And I was like, okay, because I really just wanted my kids.
There was a greater good there. And you figure,
I thought, I'll
take some of the bad to have the greater good.
Right. I really thought in my head, stupidly, like I could handle it. That's what happened.
Back you
and
go.
And that's was just, yeah. So this last part, you know, that's when things got really bad, you know. I mean, the sex stuff, you know, he was convinced I was cheating all the time, just as before, pretty much right off the bat. And so to punish me, you know, it was, you know, just control and domination at all times. I couldn't go to bed unless I rubbed his head. I had to rub his head until he fell asleep, and his back, and or give him, you know, sexual favors. And this was all after having sex first, too. This was every single night. And if I didn't do that, then there was arguing until 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. And it was, well, why don't you go get one of your other boyfriends or call them to come rescue you?
Oh, no.
And it was, if I wanted to leave, he would take my debit card, my car keys, and hide them so I couldn't find them, take my phone so I couldn't call anybody. And it was like this all the time. And of course, now I have my youngest there as well. All of this is going on, and I feel like I have to be there because the kids, like, I just feel like I have to. I don't know. It's just the cops, you know, there's cops, and then everybody gets mad at me every time I call the cops for whatever reason. I don't know why.
What was going on so that you felt the need to hit 911?
So it gets to a point sometimes where you'll do things like go, you know, when you don't get any rest at night from your abuser, sometimes you'll go and like lay with your children, you know. And I look back on that now and I'm like, man, that was really selfish of you to try to like use your kid as like a shield. And I wasn't thinking about it like that at the time, but you'll go and you'll do things like that, like, you know, squeeze into their little bed. It feels safe. It feels safe in there. And this one time I was in bed with my, she was three at the time. And he came in the room just mad as a bull. I was asleep. She was asleep. And he grabbed me, which woke me up, and pulled me out of bed right over top of her, which pulled her also out of bed. So both of us now are thudded on the floor. I jump up and grab her, and she's still asleep. She was still sleeping. Thank goodness. I put her back in bed and put the blanket on her. And I'm like, are you effing kidding me? He's all, well, I thought you were coming downstairs. What are you doing up here? So I called the cops.
Was he, besides arguing with you, getting even rougher? Is he hitting you or anything?
No, he stopped at that point. He stopped whatever he was doing at that point because he realized, you know, I mean, now all the kids were awake and, you know, he's got to be the perfect dad. Can't let anybody know that his little tiara is crooked. He wasn't huge on like physical violence. When he would get physical, it would be things like that. It wouldn't be like, oh my gosh, I just got beat all over the place.
Okay. That's good to hear.
So like this incident, you know, this second time we were together ended with him strangling me. That was the most violent he'd ever been. Yeah, he strangled me and tossed me across his mom's lawn. That's how that ended. And I got the second PFA.
So let me ask you, I've never been strangled.
Yeah.
What's going through your mind when you have someone's hands around your neck and you can't breathe?
I that's exactly what I thought. I can't breathe.
Are you thinking I'm going to die?
No, I wasn't thinking that in that moment. I just thought, oh my God, I can't. Like, I can't exchange the air. And I wasn't thinking, though, that he was going to kill me. I really didn't think he was going to kill me. I just couldn't believe he was doing that because he'd never put his hands on me like that before.
Did anyone else see that happening?
No, my daughter was in the, my oldest was in the bathroom, which was right next to where we were. So they heard everything. There was quite a lot of banging around and furniture being shoved out of the way and mm-hmm. yelling and hollering. I did say something to him right prior to him lunging at me. So, you know, she heard me say what I said. I, you know, called him Shrek. So I made him kind of mad.
So eventually you and he separated for keeps.
Yeah, we did. Right? We did. That second PFA pretty much, you know, and I will say that thank God to the Women's Center. I think it was Berks County that I went through. But I didn't even know. The first time I went through this, I didn't even know that they had lawyers to help you.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of domestic violence agencies do have lawyers on staff who will help you. And they have financial people who will do as much as they possibly can. And
I had no idea. The first time I was like made to look like a fool by the judge when I was getting my PFA, she made me feel so stupid for calling the police. You know, when I needed help, she was like, you're like wasting the community's resources with as many times as you've contacted police about, you know, domestic violence. She made me feel like, I don't know if she had no domestic violence training or what. I did not have an advocate. I did not have a lawyer. I should have had these things. And so the second time around, I was so grateful. I still got my PFA the first time around. Don't get me wrong.
Do you think her point was, you call so many times, why don't you wake up and smell the coffee and get out of there? Is that the point? Like, how many times do you need to do this before you realize that you shouldn't be around this person? Do you think that's her point?
No, I don't know, but that's not the impression I got at the time. At the time, she almost made me feel stupid, as if my situation was not valid.
Wasn't bad enough to call?
Right, as if I was just being some hysterical woman.
Oh, I see. Okay. You know. You're just running police cars around and right. distracting from real problems.
Right.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, because there was no like pictures or photos or bruises. Yeah.
I see. You hadn't documented everything.
Right.
Or there was nothing you could document for that matter.
Exactly. And now, you know, like all these years later, there's like a whole trail of this and that. So
oh, sure.
Yeah. I guess now people can't make me feel that way. So I will say, though, like I said, I'm so grateful for all those resources, having that lawyer. And I mean, because he had a lawyer, too. And I guess he really thought he was going to go in there. He thought he was even going to get a PFA on me, too. But he didn't, you know, he just thought he was going to do all these things and it didn't work out. That lawyer, she really kicked it out of the park for me. So I think it's only because of that PFA that it really just that cool down period sometimes is all you need so mm-hmm. they can just chill out in their little corner and get past that like little murderous time, you know, that time where they're all they can think about is like stalking you and like. Because, like, he's done that to me.
So he's also stalked you at times?
Oh, yeah. The first time my neighbor would tell me, like, he's been watching the house for hours. He would tell me, like, he was here today. He's been here yesterday. I would find, I remember going into the house one time. I went down in the basement. There was, like, this, all this, like, plastic sheeting and, like, new flooring and, like, this circular saw. And I was like, what the heck is that? Like, you're going to, like, chop me up and dismember my body? Like, what? You know? And he would always play for me this song by Eminem, Kim. I don't know if you've ever heard it.
No, I don't know that one.
It's a scene of domestic violence, essentially. He's rapping about killing his wife.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. And he would play this for me all the time. So that's what I think the PFA really helps with. It kind of just puts them in a mandatory timeout so that they can chill out.
What was the time period on that PFA?
I could have made it a lot longer, but I told him 6 months is okay. And the lawyer said to me, she's like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, I think 6 months is probably fine because I don't want it to go on for too indefinite of a time. We do share kids together. Mm-hmm. And I think honestly, all he needs is to just calm down. And so it ended up being fine. He's got himself a new wife now. So I feel kind of mixed feelings about that. I feel bad for her. I'm also a little bit relieved that he's got somebody else and it's not me. However, he still fixates on me anyway.
Oh, no, really?
So yeah, he does. I mean, you know, he does. I think he always will. But he's got a new baby with her. I worry about her. You know, she seems like a really nice girl. My kids have nothing but nice things to say about her, so that's good. And they say he seems to have a decent relationship with her, but they think that's just because she does whatever he says. I don't know. I hope she's okay as far as that relationship goes.
Right.
I find it hard to believe that he's only abusive to me and no one else.
Yeah, I wouldn't put any money on that horse.
No, no, I don't think so.
Not at all. Cynthia, do you have any advice that you'd like to pass along after all the twists and turns of your two decades of bumper cars with this guy and other people?
Have you ever heard of the Netflix show called The Maid?
Yes, I have.
Okay, I love that movie so much. So there's this one scene in there, you probably know which one I'm talking about, where she goes back the second time and she slips into this depression and she kind of disappears into the couch, like all the way down into this well, and she gets stuck there in the bottom. That scene was so powerful for me. I was still in it at the time I was watching that. I was still in there. And I mean, this was at a time where I wouldn't even shower for days. I didn't brush my teeth. I was just doing the bare minimum to get up in the morning and get the kids on the bus and take the abuse just day in and day out. I mean, I was in a really bad way, depression wise. And that when I saw that scene, I was like, that is me. I am her.
Yeah.
And so my advice, get therapy. When you're stuck in there, you got to tend to your mental health. I know it's easier said than done, but don't stay stuck there. Allow yourself to feel what you're feeling and don't run from it. Cause that's what I did for so long, right? Like I just ran and ran and ran and I would get stuck in just the land of dissociation and I'm not really here right now. I'm just existing in some other plane, an alternate universe. And I'm not really feeling, I'm not present. You know, either I'm not present because I'm dissociating or I'm not present because I'm on substances or I'm not present regardless. So I just allow yourself to feel, because it took me all these years to realize that the only way to get past something is to go through it. It's the only way.
Yes.
Literally.
I hear you.
And I can't believe it took me that long to figure it out, but it did. You cannot run from it. So you're going to have to let yourself feel.
It's great advice. And you acquired that line of thinking, that advice. You definitely got there the hard way. You did not learn that one in a book.
No.
So Cynthia, I want to thank you for your story. You were right. It is a hard one to listen to. And on the other hand, you are healthier now emotionally than you've ever been, you tell me.
Yeah.
You're free since 2021. You're also single, which sounds like a probably good plan for you for a good long time.
Yeah.
You reach the point where you really don't need anybody else, quite frankly. You might want, but you don't need. Big difference. You explained that healing from trauma is not a straight line, and you've demonstrated that. And that once a person gets caught in the cycles of abuse, breaking free is nearly impossible, but you did do it.
Right.
On the other hand, you are in that spot. And I don't imagine you ever going back to anything that resembles any of that.
Yeah.
And my takeaway is that you're one determined woman, a survivor who got to be one the hard way. And I just want to thank you so much for reliving your personal hell. And in doing so, probably helping others to remain free. And that's a big gift.
Thank you.
That's a big gift to the whole world. We spoke a little bit before we got rolling here about my contribution to the world. And you were talking about how you wanted to do your own version of that. And you've really done that to a fairly well today.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard. I get really nervous talking and forget what I want to say. And then I start tripping on all my words. So I'm sorry if I, in a very clumsy way, told my story. I tried my very best.
You did a brilliant job. You did.
Okay.
The key is that you delivered all the information. You made it very dimensional. You put the listener right there where it's happening. We're kind of living through these things with you, which I think is the best way. And I think that's the value of stories anyway. It's one thing if you were to just start to read off red flags and warning signs and look out for this and look out for that. It's another thing to have someone bring us into their life and just walk us through it. I mean, just take us by the hand and pull us down there where you have been, but also now pulled us back up. So it ends up being a really great thing you've done.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Cause it's probably one of those things that I've always wanted, was to just make some kind of goodness come out of all this, because, you know, I spent an awful lot of time being kind of stuck in the misery of it. So now that I'm just sort of finally starting to emerge from this chrysalis, you know, I'd like to make something good come of it. Even if that's just to talk to a couple people on your podcast on an episode. Hopefully it's not too clumsy.
not at all. It's very genuine. And, you know, you're speaking, we've been talking for a good long time, but you're speaking from your heart. I think that's what's really important. And even though we might cringe along the way with you, on the other hand, I think that we emerge here as we finish. So thank you so much.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful what you've done. You have been very unselfish and generous in doing this. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
This concludes Cynthia's story. Cynthia's portrayal of the many facets of her life has to be admired. She didn't attempt to make herself out to be a saint. Instead, she showed her truth in a genuine way, without any spin. It's clear the best way to keep trouble away is to know what you're dealing with and to avoid it at all costs. Dating abuse and domestic violence only leads to a lifetime of broken dreams. The When Dating Hurts podcast is always looking for survivor stories. Survivors give us powerfully descriptive ways to see and feel the intense horror that is domestic violence. From the warning signs they either missed or ignored, to the days of suffering, emotional and physical abuse, but still staying in these relationships. Survivors explain the hidden world we want our listeners to fully understand and steer clear of. If there is a story you want us to hear, contact me at BillMitchell@WhenDatingHurts.com. That's BillMitchell@WhenDatingHurts.com. Hi, it's Bill Mitchell. I'm proud to say the When Dating Hurts podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. To learn more about Evergreen Podcasts or to check out other shows on the Evergreen Network, just visit evergreenpodcasts.com.